You're listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, go to nakedbiblepodcast.com and click on the support link in the upper right-hand corner. If you're new to the podcast and Dr. Heiser's approach to the Bible, click on New Start Here at nakedbiblepodcast.com.
Welcome to the Naked Bible Podcast, episode 244, ETS, Conference Interviews, part 3. I'm the layman, Trey Strickland, and he's the scholar, Dr. Michael Heiser. All right, Mike. Two down. Too many more to come.
Yeah. We still have a lot of work to do. So, again, it's been pretty hectic, but we, maybe we're at about the halfway point. Who knows? We've got a long trail to go yet. SBL, it can be a little more of a logistic challenge because it's so much bigger, but, you know, we've been there before. We'll get it pulled off again. In this episode, we have Doug Van Dorn. Again, listeners might be familiar with him because of Peer Anormal. Doug is a pastor in the area. We're in Denver. So he has a church of his own that he started, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago. He'll be with us. Gary Yates is going to spend some time with us. Gary is an Old Testament professor at Liberty University. And I've known him for a number of years. He's the fellow that I've alluded to before that uses Unseen Realm in a biblical theology class. We'll talk about, you know, Gary and, you know, the ministry of Liberty and, again, what some of the things Gary works on. And then we will have Sam Lamerson. Sam is a New Testament prof. Again, we've interviewed him. He'll be familiar to our podcast audience. He stopped by. He actually just got in. He stopped by with us to talk about Knox Seminary, where he's at, and, again, some of the things that he's been working on as well. And also, lastly, on this episode, we have Jesse Myers. Jesse works with Lexham Press. Again, that's the publication house that produced Unseen Realm. Again, that's an imprint of Faith Life Logos Bible Software. They're several years old. They were a couple of years old when they decided to tackle Unseen Realm, and did a really good job on that. But we want to talk about how Lexham approaches what they do publish and some new things that they have coming out that I think this audience will be interested in. Welcome back to the annual meeting of the Evangelical Theological Society. This is the last day for that event. We'll soon be transitioning to SBL. But we have with us here, still at ETS, Doug Van Dorn. Now, that's going to be a name familiar to many of you. Doug is a co-host of Peer Anormal, but he is also a pastor in the area. So, Doug, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself. Tell us about you and your church.
Yeah, so I grew up here in Denver and went to high school here. Moved away to go to college in Minnesota, Minneapolis, to Bethel. Back in the day, it was Bethel College. Mm-hmm. And then I came back here, got married, went to Denver Seminary, and ended up starting a church in 2002, beginning of 2002.
Okay.
So we're still part of that same church.
Wow.
And 16, almost 17 years now.
Yeah.
And the church has been in four different locations. We still don't own property because it's super expensive here.
Sure, yeah.
And so we are currently in a neighborhood of Boulder called Gun Barrel, but it's unincorporated. So
Gun Barrel
in Boulder, yeah.
That's right.
Nothing could be more beautiful than that.
So what's the name of the church?
It's the Reformed Baptist Church of Northern Colorado.
Okay.
Nice long name.
Yeah, well, that's, you know... There's nothing weird in there. You know?
There's nothing weird in there.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't belong in Boulder. I don't know. So, you know, I've visited Boulder before. You know, we had some things to do out here. And just say a little bit about the experience of being in Boulder.
Boulder is very, very tough soil spiritually.
Yeah.
And put it that way. We've tried multiple outreaches to the campus, and we've had a little success, but not a lot of success.
Okay.
We do have a small kind of a college group that's come, but we're not in Boulder, so they have to kind of take the bus.
They have to get out. And, yeah.
That's always hard
for
kids.
So, I mean, you've characterized it as sort of a new agey, hippie-ish, pagan-ish.
Yeah, they actually call Boulder, was it like 20 square miles surrounded by reality?
Yeah.
You know, they purchased all this open space around it so nobody can ever build anywhere near them. And they've got their little socialist utopia that...
Oh, sweet.
That they can have.
So maybe you should put that in the title, like the Reformed Baptist Socialist Church. Or
yeah. Might get more people to come.
Right.
I don't know how exciting the people themselves
would be. Yeah, they wouldn't last very long.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Doug is the author of the little handbook that distills the content of Unseen Realm. Again, it's set up like a catechism.
Yeah.
Again, the inside joke between us was it has 95 questions in it.
Well, it didn't originally. And I know. You cropped it down to 95.
But
I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
We had to do the 95 theses thing. So why don't you say a little bit about what your philosophy was in creating that? Because, you know, I still get asked, you know, how do I teach this? How do I teach, you know, Unseen Realm stuff, supernatural content to my church? And I typically say, well, you ought to get the handbook, because that distills things into, you know, kind of like not really soundbite, but very small statements of different points with verse references. So did that grow out of your attempt to either your attempt or your experience in the past to teach this kind of stuff, that you had to sort of break it down, or
to some
or was
degree.
It a different origin?
I mean, it was actually might say that was more me trying to teach myself.
Okay.
Because I didn't come to this independently of you. It was through your work,
okay.
But you know, I didn't collaborate with you at all on the thing.
Yeah,
in fact, I sent it to you on the original draft, hoping
yeah.
you might give me yeah. a blurb or something, and then you really liked it. But you know, I'm a Reformed, so when I became Reformed, we started learning about what catechisms are, and it wasn't a bad word anymore, mm-hmm. which it was growing up, and it's just questions and answers, and
right? Yeah, that's all a catechism is. Yeah,
so. You know, I just really thought that there's a need for teaching in that format, because it's conducive to teaching little kids and mm-hmm. things like that, to teach them supernatural stuff. So I went through the book, and then I did some of my own stuff, and I'd written the mm-hmm. book on giants. And
yep.
and so there was a lot of that stuff that wasn't as relevant to what you were doing. Mm-hmm. But and I did that, and I was also teaching a class on Revelation. So there were questions in there that weren't really at all related to what mm-hmm. you did. But so there was a little bit more to it than just, you know, wanting yeah. to have it be a primer. I actually never even thought of it being yeah. a primer for that.
Well, you know, inside the building, you know, we saw it, and it's like, you know, that was the reason they said yes, you know, if I was involved, and then trying to, you know, pare it down to not 95. Again, I'll own that. That was my idea. But, you know, to make it this thing that connects real easily, you know, to the book, both in terms of if you have it in hard copy, and of course software just links.
Yeah.
So if you're out there wondering, how do I again distill the content into something digestible, you know, something that I could maybe construct a sermon around, or I'm in a passage that the content is relevant to, how do I express this or that idea? I mean, this is the thing you should have. So I still again get this question. And to me, that's the easiest answer. You know
the Reformed community, they will teach, some of them will teach like through the Heidelberg Catechism during the course of a year. So there's
yeah.
52 questions, and breaks perfect for the
right.
for 1 week a year. And,
yep.
and so you could probably do something like that if you wanted to.
Yeah, you could pick a question a week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So this is your first, it is your first time at ETS, correct?
They were here in Colorado Springs like in 2001 or 2002,
oh, okay.
and I went to the Broadmoor for that, but it's only the second one.
Okay. So what's your experience? Good. Hear any good papers? Hear any kind of so-so papers, humdrum? It's always, you know, just this random kind of thing.
Yeah, I've heard, I'd say some of all of that.
Okay.
Yeah, my favorite was probably, I just finished preaching through the Psalms.
All right.
And they were doing a thing, one of my former professors at Bethel Seminary, well, he was at the seminary, I was at the college, and he was an adjunct, so he came there, and he was doing a thing with Tremper Longman on reading the Psalter as a book,
okay.
so not just a collection of songs. His name was David Howard.
Yeah, I know Dave. I was yeah. going to say, was it David
great.
Howard?
Yeah, he's yeah. great. Mm-hmm. So they actually, it was funny, like, I felt like because they're older, they a little bit more chilled, so they were more conversive, and it wasn't really like they were reading their papers
right,
too much.
Right.
So then contrast that to a couple of, they were good papers early in the morning that, I think it was yesterday, and they were talking about liturgy and the Lord's Supper and speech act and stuff like this, and it was really just kind of
yeah
tote the line and use really, really, really big words. And,
right. Yeah. Throw in some German there. You know, Gesundheit. Yeah. You know.
So it's good content. I mean, it's a theological convention.
Were you at the, I mean, Gary Habermas had one yesterday, late in the day on near-death experiences. Were you in the room?
No, I didn't even know he was doing that.
Yeah, it was really crowded. I was in the back. I stayed for a while. But our other friend Greg was in there. And it was more or less, it was kind of a presentation for people here in the evangelical academic orbit that really did not know what this was or why it's even important to think about it. So it was very basic overview. So if you were in the room, I mean, like I've read Van Lommel's book, you know, on NDEs. He's the cardiologist from over in the Netherlands and stuff like that, which is a pretty hefty book. And it's good, even though I don't like at least one of his conclusions. But if you had read that kind of stuff, you really didn't, you know, learn anything. He mentioned some recent resource books, which, I mean, I can go to Amazon and get that. So you run into that too. Like you think, wow, you know, I'm going to hear something new here, but it's actually getting people's feet wet.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was
looking for the weirdest things I could find here. Yeah. Well, I couldn't find hardly anything.
Yeah.
If
you want weird, you go to AAR, you know, then you can, cohort with the pagans and the Gnostics.
So I have to tell you this story.
Okay. Go ahead.
As a near death experience, not mine, woman that we met from Nepal. I have no idea what to do with this story. It's the weirdest thing. Uh-huh. So she was burned over like 85% of her body. I think it was her ex-husband that did it to her. And she ended up dying. And so the way she tells the story is she was actually, this is in Kathmandu, so it's not a third world country. Mm-hmm. I mean, kind of second world or something, but legitimate hospital. And her body was covered. The family had been called in. They were sitting there arguing over what they're going to do, you know, with the burial and stuff. So she was in there dead for 4 or 5 hours. And she talks about this near-death experience that she had. And I learned about it because we were talking about watchers. And I think I was talking about like Jacob Ziggurat. And she was intrigued by what I was saying and ended up showing her a picture of, I think it's the Ziggurat at Ur. And as soon as I showed her this, she goes, "That is what I saw. That is what I saw." And her eyes like lit up and she talks about seeing these tall beings that kind of took her up this thing, and then for some reason they brought her back.
Kind of like the vision there, you know, with Jacob.
Very similar to
that.
Yeah, very strange.
Wow, that is interesting. Yeah, that would be hard to forget that one.
Yeah, it's hard to forget. I don't know what to do with it, but
you know, usually it's like like Habermas told a funny story in his session about someone who had died. And they took the body to the morgue, and a doctor came in, you know, to, I guess, you know, look at it. Or and the nurse was there prepping, you know, the body, and he said, the person on the table, who was dead, but then you know came back, reported these two later on to hospital administration because he said they started doing things that doctors and nurses shouldn't do in hospitals. So they actually got caught.
Way.
They got caught by the corpse. You
know? Wow.
So he said, that's not very scientific, but it's kind of funny, you know, things like that happen. So, yeah, I mean, but I appreciate the fact that they put that on the schedule.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they may have done it because it's Gary Habermas. You know, he's known in apologetics and usually historical Jesus stuff. But he does, you know, move over. He drifts off into this category a lot. This is not his first go around with that topic, but it was kind of nice to see it. You know, you wouldn't really associate it with an evangelical theological society meeting. So I was glad to see it, but it was pretty basic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what you get. So yeah, thanks for sharing a few minutes with us. Glad you heard something that you liked.
Definitely.
He said Dave is good. He's a good good presenter. He has interesting material. So you know, I didn't know you had him as a professor, though. That it was that guy.
Definitely that guy. He didn't remember me. It was 30 years ago.
Sure.
But once I told him about it, he actually forgot he taught the class because he was at the seminary.
Okay.
And for some reason, the college had him come over and do the class.
They do a lot of that, the adjuncting relationship with the seminary.
And I think he moved away from Bethel right after that. Went down to like New Orleans, and then he's been back about for many years.
Yeah. Well, again, thanks for visiting us for a few minutes.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yep. Well, we're back again at Denver for the Evangelical Theological Society annual meetings. This is the last day, so we have a few more interviews left, and we're blessed to have Gary Yates with us, Dr. Gary Yates from Liberty University. Gary and I have known each other for, you know, probably 10 years at least, because, you know, we do papers maybe in the same sections. We're both Old Testament guys. Nevertheless, I want him to introduce himself to you, and then we'll get into some specifics.
I thought maybe we were going to talk about baseball.
We had our spring training discussion.
Okay, already. No baseball. Gary Yates from Liberty University, and I teach Old Testament studies. I did my PhD at Dallas Seminary, and that's one of the areas that I teach in at Liberty.
Uh-huh.
And I teach both residentially and online. We have a pretty large online program.
Yeah. So. Yeah. What are some of your classes that you teach, either the online or on the Green campus?
Online, I teach Isaiah and Psalms, and then I teach those classes residentially as well. I've done some biblical theology courses, mm-hmm. and I do some of the Old Testament intro and orientation, mm-hmm. just giving big scale surveys.
You used Unseen Realm for something. Was it the biblical theology one?
We used it for the biblical theology class, and prompted a lot of interesting discussions.
Any fist fights?
No. It was very positive, and I've been amazed. I was preaching at a church a couple of months ago, mm-hmm. and the first thing a guy asked me right after the service, did you ever hear this guy Heiser in his book Unseen Realm? I said, you know, amazingly, I know him. And the students responded well. And I think, first of all, just being exposed to some of the issues with like Psalm 82, Genesis 6.
Yeah.
But then to see that in the New Testament in the context of Jesus' ministry or Revelation and the there not being a sea in the future and those kind of, it was very helpful.
Yeah. You know, we can go as deep into this or as shallow into this as you like. But I don't know if you remember this, but this has stuck with me. Right after the book came out, and apparently right after you had read it, you and I bumped into each other at SBL, and you I know you're not a prophet or the son of a prophet, but you had this cryptic comment, and you said, you know, someday we're going to come to an ETS meeting and we're going to watch a panel or hear somebody, you know, do a paper on whether we should assign authority to the Old Testament's presentation of the unseen world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time I thought, really, like ETS, would ETS, I mean, we're evangelicals, but that has stuck with me. And, you know, now that the book has sort of ballooned to be big enough where I can't say sort of like the haters have come out, but you do see some of this like these whispers of suspicion, you know, like this guy. Have you ever heard of this guy? I mean, I'm starting to hear some of that, and every time I do, it takes my mind back to what you said. Yeah. So I don't know how you feel about that now, but
and I think what I've seen, this used to be an issue that it would occasionally come up in an Old Testament class, mm-hmm. but I hear a much broader range of students that are raising these questions, even in systematic theology classes.
Okay.
And then, you know, at the church level, I had never heard anyone ever, you know, ask about the divine counsel or those kinds of things. And I think it's generated some conversations about that.
Yeah. You know, I won't name the podcast, but Mark Smith has recently mm-hmm. appeared on an evangelical podcast. And again, Smith he's the divine counsel guy over on, I guess, what we'd call the secular side. I mean, Mark's not an anti-Christian guy. He's a Catholic. But he takes the standard consensus view of this evolutionary trajectory from polytheism to monotheism for biblical writers. And I had people send this to me, like, why is an evangelical seemingly adopting this trajectory? So it's starting to sort of leak out. And these different views are sort of emerging. So again, it just always takes my mind, mm-hmm. you know, back to that. So I might look at you as and say that was really prescient, you know.
It's the first time it's ever happened. But I think that's the good thing is that typically when as a professor, if you wanted to introduce this idea, the only sources that you had did present kind of an evolutionary view. And I was often a little confused as to how do I do this myself as an evangelical. Mm-hmm. I think your book has helped, you know, even those of us that teach these things.
Yeah, well, you know, Lord willing, I mean, that's the point, really. Now, you told me before we sat down here and got started that you have a new book coming out, and it's sort of a companion to something that's already out. Right. So go ahead and let us know about that.
Yeah, B&H a couple of years ago did a Urban Legends of the New Testament, mm-hmm. and my friend and a former colleague, David Croteau, dealt with 40 sort of commonly misapplied, misinterpreted New Testament passages.
Yeah.
The book did well, and so they decided that they wanted us to do an Old Testament volume.
Yeah.
And so we did 40 commonly misunderstood.
Yeah, that's Old a great Testament. It's a great title, you know, Urban Legends and whatnot.
Well, I think the hard thing is that, you know, we might have stretched the term in a few places because you don't want the book to be totally about just really wacky things.
Right, right.
But there were places where I think urban legend referred to commonly held Christian views that I think sometimes are not well thought out or maybe have imposed the New Testament on the old.
Uh-huh.
So I see it very similar to some of the issues that I've seen you raising on Naked Bible from time to time.
Yeah. So for listeners, B&H is Broadman and Holman. So all you have to do is go up to Amazon, Urban Legends, New Testament. Then, of course, is it on pre-order yet?
No, it's not. Okay. It should be out next year sometime.
Okay. So you get the Urban Legends New Testament volume, and then look for Gary's Old Testament volume. Before we leave, anything about Liberty that you want people to know? Because I get asked questions all the time. I mean, they knew I was attached to Liberty in Distance Ed, but I still get questions all the time. You know, where can I take a class? You know, can I go to seminary without like quitting my job and moving? And so what's the latest with what's going on there?
Yeah, I think that's one of the advantages of Liberty is just a large online program. And we do have, it's not just Liberty professors, the course that you developed in Hebrew exegesis, we're still using.
Okay.
So we have adjuncts from all around the world, and we're adding, you know, new programs. And I think there's even some doctoral programs down the line that will not require you to come to the campus.
Yeah, that's a good idea to, you know, sort of doing the research model, you know, the European model.
That's more what these classes, I think, are moving to, or what the program is moving to.
All right. Well, good. You know, again, you know, we had Mark Futato on previously, and he talked about RTS. You know, we're going to have Sam Lamerson on. He's going to talk about Knox. I mean, I just want people to know that you don't have to uproot, you know, even if it's just as simple as taking a class online and you can get a degree. I mean, you can actually do this. Even with languages, you know, there are lots of things that are available, so they should know about that.
Right, and I think students would be surprised at how deeply you can dig into some of these classes. A lot of it's self-starting in some ways, but you can get a good deal out of it if you're motivated. It's different from the classroom, but I think a good alternative for people that you know, can't do that. And we have a number of military students, so we have students, you know, studying all around the world.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, there are a lot of chaplains, I noticed, you know.
Yeah, you probably.
Yeah, just a lot of chaplains in the program when I was in it. I will throw a baseball thing in here. Okay, your favorite team is?
Baltimore Orioles.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about the last difficult year. Yeah, it's been a.
But I'm thankful because Steve Pierce came over to Boston and was instrumental in my Red Sox winning the World Series.
And he played minor league baseball in Lynchburg.
Okay.
So all right. I'll throw that in there.
We appreciate the sacrifice. All right. Well, thanks for spending some time with us.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the chance.
Yeah. Well, we're back again in Denver, the annual meetings of the Evangelical Theological Society. And we have a familiar voice, at least. We've interviewed Sam Lamerson before, but now we've got a little bit of video to go with that. And Sam, again, is no stranger to the podcast. We had an episode on the Pane Ross that's still downloaded and listened to. Sam is, his field is New Testament, but I don't want to introduce him for him because he's a lot more than a New Testament guy. He's got a lot of sort of plate spinning. We're familiar with that. So, Sam, why don't you tell people who you are, what you do?
Sure. I'm president and professor of New Testament at Knox Seminary in Fort Lauderdale. I teach primarily Greek and exegesis and hermeneutics, things like that. Online, I teach New Testament. I teach sort of an intro to Greek class using Logos, stuff like that. A lot of what I do, since I'm the president, is go around and meet people, meet students, meet donors, tell them about the seminary, tell them about the great things that are going on. So it's a great time.
Yeah. So what is new at Knox?
There are a lot of things. We have just been approved by ATS, the accreditation body for seminaries.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal to have our MDiv fully online. So if you've always wanted to get an MDiv and couldn't afford the time to come out or whatever, Knox Seminary at knoxseminary.edu, our MDiv is fully online and fully accredited by ATS, the highest accreditation body for seminaries in the country.
Yeah.
And we worked very hard. My colleagues worked very hard, and I didn't have as much to do with it as I did trying to give them some direction, but it's a really big deal, and we were excited about that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I had another friend who was a president of a school at the time, and that can be a life-sucking experience.
Yeah.
They really put you through the ringer.
It is. There are times when I hate it, and other times when I just feel like this is the greatest thing in the world. When I'm with students or when I'm with donors, being able to explain what's going on, it's a wonderful time, and I really love it. When I'm grinding it out day after day, filling out reports and things like that, yep, it's not quite as exciting.
Yeah. Now, we talked to Mark Furtado earlier and Gary Yates earlier. I mean, I want people to understand the ability to get a complete MDiv degree, really a complete degree anywhere, MA, MDiv, but especially MDiv because it's a little longer than a traditional MA. The ability to do that completely online is a pretty unique thing.
Yeah, it is. There are very few schools that have that now, because ATS, essentially you're asking them for an exception. In general, they don't grant fully online MDiv degrees, but you can get an exception if you have everything laid out and you've done everything they asked you to, and it takes a lot of time, a lot of work, but we're really, really proud of the degree and proud of the ability to offer it.
Yeah, so I get questions, again, all the time about, you know, where can I take a class? Who does distance ed? And in some cases, you know, it is either somebody who's contemplating going into the ministry or somebody already in the ministry that wants to go to seminary, and they don't want to leave their church. They don't want to quit their job. They don't want to uproot their family. Again, this option, you know, hybrid programs are nice. I mean, and they have some benefits to them, obviously, where you have to, you know, commute to the institution a few times a year for a week at a time. But the ability to not have to do that, again, that sort of amps up the convenience factor. And if it's ATS accredited, it's not going to be this fly-by-night kind of thing.
Right. And, I mean, there are certainly valuable benefits to being on campus. Nobody would disagree with that. But the problem is that not everybody can go to on campus.
Yeah.
It's becoming more and more a world where people are educated online.
And they expect it.
Yeah, people expect it.
People who grew up with technology expect
that. There are schools who will say, we're not having online education. And I say that's fine. But eventually, you're going to be a typewriter repairman.
Yeah.
You know, you can fight against it all you want, and you can use the typewriter all you want, but sooner or later, you're going to be the only one in the room using it.
Yeah. No, again, since I work at Logos, we run into this a lot that, you know, the younger a person is, I mean, now that there's so much you can get, like in books in digital form. So even the book itself, it's like, why would I buy one of those, you know, when I can get it
exactly
on a handheld? Or You grow up with this, where there's this instant, and again, you can criticize it. Well, it's instant gratification, and we don't want to cater to that. You know, okay, I understand that. But when it comes time to a decision to, again, quit everything, and it sounds a little goofy, but this has been seminary. I'm going to quit my ministry at my church to go get a degree to do ministry in a church.
And hope that I can afford it all.
Right. And hope you can afford it all. And when you get hired, hope that you can pay back loans and things like that. So, you know, the distance ed model is, is a meaningful, certainly an adjustment. And I would say in today's culture, it's actually a course correction.
Yeah.
You know, to actually, you know, make this available.
And so every credit student at Knox gets Logos as part of their tuition. Just got the new Logos 8. We love it. The workflows are just wonderful. It's a great tool. And with that and with some tools they have on the internet, the need for librarians is really going away. There was an article in the Chronicle of Higher Education a couple of months ago about how many librarians are just losing their jobs because people don't use physical libraries that much anymore.
Yeah, it's information management from a keyboard, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's true. So, you know, you mentioned your administrative duties, your teaching duties. What do you do for fun?
Well, one of the things
you still preach as well.
I do. I still preach sometimes, not all the time. And I have my Harry Potter socks on, so I've got that going. One of the things that we do is about every couple of months, we have this thing for whomever wants to come called Lunch and Learn. And I pick some obscure topic. I've done one on UFOs. I did one at Halloween on the Salem witch trials. I did one a couple of months before that on the theology of snake handling. And it's an interesting thing, you know, because you see snake handlers are looked at as this bizarre group of people sociologically, but rarely does anyone take the time to sort of figure out how their theology drives them to do those kinds of things. So it was a really interesting time and the people really liked it.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty diverse. I mean, people in our audience know that, you know, Sam's the guy who put himself through seminary as a street performer.
That's right.
You're a magician. You know,
show up on reruns on Nickelodeon every once in a while.
Yeah, you got a lot of these kinds of interests. And they're, again, people who are familiar with, you know, me, you know that I'm into this. And it's, you know, it's real simple. You know, you're trying to get people to think better about a topic or primary sources. And the Bible always gets sucked into these topics. So trying to help people think better about these things and not being dismissive.
Yeah.
Because depending on what the topic is, they can be really significant components to their entire worldview and even their identity. So you do need to be a little bit more careful, a little bit more respectful, but at the same time, again, trying to get them to think better about Jesus and what the message of the Bible is. And there's a huge need for that.
There is. And in terms of the snake handling, there was a Nat Geo show that it blew up, big, big show on snake handlers. And it was more a sociological kind of thing. Nobody ever really asked them about, you know, what about your theology causes you to think that it's the right thing to do to handle snakes? And how come this hasn't occurred anywhere in church history and doesn't occur anywhere out of sort of Appalachia in the United States? Mm-hmm. All of those, which are really, I think, significant questions about the practice of snake handling.
So that series has been pretty popular.
Yeah, one of the stars of that series died shortly after the series ended, died of a snake bite. Then his son took over, and he nearly died of a snake bite. He went to the hospital, which many of them won't. He went to the hospital but was very, very close to dying from a snake bite.
Hmm. Wow. So how many of these lunches have you done?
Probably 25, maybe. Uh-huh. We do them every couple of months.
And they're open to the public.
They're open to the public. Yeah. Anybody can come who wants to. And I try to have some, you know, there's some just straight theological topics, but sometimes I just have some weird stuff just to keep me happy.
Yeah, well, and it also will get, you know, people, you know, into the room, you know,
yeah.
who might need to hear. I mean, just the fact that, hey, I teach New Testament at a seminary. You know, I'm a president of a seminary, and here I am talking about this. That's going to run quite contrary to the perception of Christians that they bring.
And people will come to that kind of a lunch. Some of them don't even go to church. Yeah. Some of them, you know, show up to church every great once in a while. And so it's in many ways a real opportunity to sort of help them think through these issues of Christianity and popular culture.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're doing that. I mean, I'm not surprised that it's popular. I'm not surprised that you get good attendance to that. And, you know, people are really interested. So thanks for catching up with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I still remember the old days when it was you and I and a few other people on an email list. And that was a long time ago.
Yeah. So good to hear from you, and glad things are, you know, really moving in a
good
direction at Knox too.
blessings on you, and I hope you guys have a wonderful time and more people pick up podcasts and listen to it. It's a wonderful thing.
Thanks. Welcome back to the Evangelical Theological Society annual meeting in Denver. And our special guest this time is Jesse Myers of Lexham Press, but you have a personal history that our readers and listeners and viewers are not aware of. We've talked to Brannon before. So Jesse works with Brannon and Lexham Press, and I'm going to let you introduce yourself, what your background is, what your job title is, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, my name is Jesse. As Mike said, I work with Brannon. He's the publisher. I'm associate publisher of Partnerships and Acquisitions. And I've gone through, I think I've had 7 job titles at Faith Life.
That's not uncommon.
Through my time. I came originally from Erdman, so that's where I came from, to Lagos. I started studying English literature. I did a master's degree at Providence Theological Seminary. I went and did further graduate work in moral theology at the Milton Institute in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And then moved to Grand Rapids. My wife's a mathematician, so that's how we got the, we're Canadians, and that's how we got the green card to come. They're after mathematicians, and I kind of rode those pigtails, and then started working for Erdman's, and then came over to Lagos. I was really hired as a content expert for the packages that go along with the base packages when you buy Lagos.
Okay.
So I built the Reformed base packages, and then I continued building the Anglican base packages. But because of my history at Erdman's, I was a sales manager there.
Mm-hmm.
They asked me to do more and more for Lexham.
Right.
And eventually it was like, well, maybe I should just be doing this all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Just take a few hats off.
Yeah. So I started as a product manager there, and then was marketing manager, and then was associate publisher of marketing and sales. Mm-hmm. And then I started to do more and more acquisitions and getting more interested in the content side.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been my full-time gig now, is finding publisher, like finding authors and partnerships, which is an important part of what Lexham does, is partnerships as well as just direct.
Why don't you distinguish between the relationship with authors and partnerships, just so people know what that is?
Right. So an author relationship, we speak to an author, we either present them with an idea for a book, or they come to us with an idea for a book, and we write a contract and do a book. With the partnership, we're dealing usually with an institution or another publisher, and putting together a broader partnership that might involve several books or several authors.
Like licensing some of their titles and stuff like that.
That kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Or co-publishing, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So what is, if somebody asked you, okay, you know, I'm on the website, I'm looking through books that Lexham has published, or like I got the catalog, how would you describe Lexham's philosophy of acquisition, or how would you explain what gets in the catalog, what interests you as far as a book that Lexham might be interested in, either in licensing or acquiring?
Yeah, there's a, we publish quite a broad range within the evangelical space. What we're looking for is original, strong content. We don't necessarily always go after the big name authors. Well, obviously we do partner with people who are really well known and have platform.
Yeah.
I think we have a little more ability than some publishers to help people acquire that. We're looking for content that's putting something new out there or restating something that needs to be said again. We have a few areas that we specialize in. We have really strong language tools. You know, the Greek verb Revisited that came out last year.
Yeah.
Really, that was an important contribution to the field.
Yeah.
We have a suite of grammars coming out, a Hebrew grammar and a workbook.
Yeah.
2 Greek grammars, one that's designed for seminaries that are switching to more of a tool-based digital model, and then a traditional grammar that's more of a deductive approach. We have the Method series, which talks about the methodologies behind biblical studies. Then we've got Monograph series, where we're, again, we're going after original content that's really strong, new contributions to the fields of theology, biblical studies, and systematics, historical theology. So we have 2 Monograph series. And then we also publish stuff that serves the church. And we have pastoral resources, preaching resources, and we're working on more and more stuff that serves the church as well as the academy.
Ballpark number of how many books Lexham publishes?
What's
the length of the catalog?
Area of 50 a year.
Okay.
It varies and depends a little bit. Some of the books are almost like several books in one. Some of the books that we do are huge and are very complicated.
Yeah.
Other books are, you know, just a standard 50,000 word kind of monograph.
Okay. So what's new in the catalog this year, or something that you want to sort of highlight for our audience? Obviously, you know, Unseen Realm published that through Lexham Press. But, you know, other than my stuff, what would you want to draw people's attention to?
Well, we're really excited about a few books in our catalog this year. One of my favorite books is The Apostles' Creed by Ben Myers.
Okay.
He just goes through the creed sentence by sentence and clause by clause and reflects really deeply on it. And it's written at a level that, you know, my son actually read it and he's 10.
Okay.
But it's also something that I gained a lot out of reading it. So it's written at a level that anybody can read it almost, but it's also with a richness that anybody's going to gain from it.
Is it like a devotional, or is it explanatory, or a little bit of both?
It's a little of both. It's not pure devotional.
Okay.
But it's not like a history of the Apostles' Creed.
All right.
But it's richly in, it's very much in tune with, and he's very knowledgeable at the church fathers and the early church. And so that background is all there, but he's not showing it off.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you've had Mark Ward on to talk about Authorize, which is a really interesting book.
Yeah, that I think, I mean, I would be surprised if that doesn't do pretty well.
It has been doing well.
Yeah, that's kind of a, even if you're not immersed in the King James only thing, you've probably heard about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that would not surprise me at all. What else?
Well, another story that ties into this is that we acquired another publisher this year. That was part of the partnerships rule.
Okay.
And so Weaver Book Company, Jim Weaver is a guy who has worked in publishing for his whole career. And when he retired, he just couldn't shake it.
Okay.
So he spent about 3 years just publishing books on his own. And he has this great network of relationships that he'd built up. And so he published a lot of great books. And then he kind of was like, you know what? This one-man show thing is a lot of work. And so he started looking for a partner to help him take over the catalog. And when we looked at what he'd had, he's got Walt Kaiser, Andreas Kostenberger, all these great guys and really strong content.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jim didn't have the capacity to market his books very extensively, so they weren't on my radar. Yeah. And
so was the connection made? I mean, what?
He reached out to us, and he knew that the kinds of things that we were doing was in sync with his interests.
Okay,
and so we went ahead with it, and those books are just now starting to come out under the Lexham brand, and there's some really great content in there.
Wow.
Jeffrey Niehaus has a 3-volume biblical theology, incredibly rich content. There's a fellow at Biola named Thaddeus Williams, and he has the first volume in what he calls an inductive systematics, called Reflect. And so what it's doing is he's going through people's lives, like celebrities and people you know about, and talking about the ways in which they are Christ-like and the things about their lives that we can help to grow in Christ. And so the book is really about Christ, but it's talking about the way that Christ is reflected in the world. And he's very much a Kuiperian. He's coming from that worldview and common grace and that sort of way of thinking about things. There's going to be 2 more volumes, one about the Spirit, what about the Father? It's an incredibly innovative way of teaching people about Trinitarian theology while they're not even knowing. They find out at the end, oh, wait a minute, all this stuff makes sense.
that's quite different. Wow. That sounds like a really important, you know, thing to have.
Yeah. So when we found out that he had planned more of it, we just signed him up for the rest of the book.
Oh, yeah.
Like for the rest of the series. Yeah. And we're going to, you know, make it all consistent with what he started with Jim. But we're going to continue on and make that a continuity with Lexham.
Wow. You know, we haven't talked to Carl Kutz and Rebecca Jasperger yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, I don't know what's going on, you know, at the tables as far as, you know, moving that, but that's another work, I think, like you mentioned, the Greek, you know, I revisited. That was a genuine contribution. I actually think for an introductory grammar, this one's going to be as well.
Yeah, it's already been picked up by a number of pretty important seminaries and schools, and their approach has been, you know, reputed to be the most effective in the country, that their students are coming out a year ahead of everybody else.
In our program at Wisconsin, the students that came up, you know, through Multnomah did draw attention. I mean, when I was there, I had Carl, as a TA instructor for what the department called second year Hebrew. It wasn't sort of your traditional syntax class. It was, I can't put it, it was Carl's system. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it actually ended up sort of getting people at the same level on the same page. And so he was doing that there.
Yeah.
And so it didn't surprise me to you know, run into people who went through the program later.
Yeah.
That had been to Multnomah, and to hear other people in the department say, well, boy, they just seem more prepared than we are. Why is that the case? Yeah.
So they've got what their approach is, reading for comprehension is their phrase that they like to use, where they're getting you started really, really early on with the basic tools to do translation and understanding right at the get-go. So rather than building all the foundations and then getting you started, you learn those foundations integrated way.
Yeah.
And it's been really effective. And we're really proud with how the book has turned out. We put Doug Mangan, the ultimate, he put a ton of work in with Carl and Rebecca, getting it really well done. And now the book is in your hand. All those hours of work are there to see.
Yeah, I remember several years ago talking to them about, I don't even know if it was an intentional meeting or discussion, but finding out they were working on a grammar, it's like, well, you know, you need to bring that over here.
Yeah.
It was, and I haven't followed it through the process. So when it came out this year, it's like, boy, this is good stuff. This is long overdue.
Yeah.
To actually get this in the can.
Yep.
And it was good that, you know, we got to do it. So yeah, that's an important work. Because we, in our audience, you know, a lot of people are motivated, through self-study to either, you know, do something with hermeneutics. How do I study the Bible better? Mm-hmm. But a lot of them want to learn, you know, the biblical languages. And so I get asked with some regularity about, you know, recommending grammars and things like this. So I'm real happy, you know, that I can be able to recommend this one.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, there are other good grammars, obviously. But again, this one sort of has this invisible track record that those of us who know them and are familiar with, you know, Multnomah and the school, there's a history there already, even though it's not visible to the public.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really nice.
Yeah. We're really proud of how it's turning out. And I think it's going to become a really important tool for a lot of schools.
Yeah. So any prognostications? Can you tell us anything that's in the pipeline? I mean, I don't know how much of that kind of stuff you're allowed to share. I'm
trying to think of
what's... We've had a couple people on that their books are either on pre-order or not quite on pre-order. Yeah. So
I got a few that I can share that are fairly far along. Kevin Van Hooser's got a book called Hearers and Doers.
Okay.
And it's about basically training up, doing theology as a pastor and in the pastorate.
Is this an intentional part of the pastor as theologian sort of
movement? It's in that same sort of place. And it's in harmony with some of the things that he's done before.
Okay.
But he's bringing it more to the church.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's going to be, I think, a really important volume.
Yeah.
That's going to come out next year.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. I'm at the same company, but I'm sort of isolated from a lot of the stuff that goes on. So, yeah, I didn't know about a number of these things. So, yeah, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to chat anytime, Mike.
Yeah, and the website is
LexionPress.com. Check it out.
LexionPress.com. Yeah, please don't just associate Unseen Realm with that. There's a lot of other stuff in the catalog that you would enjoy and benefit from. So, take a look.
All right, Mike, four great interviews. It's too bad Sam didn't do any magic tricks. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't.
Yeah, we have to catch him with the card deck.
Yeah. We talked about some of the conspiracies, though, at the Denver airport. That's kind of fun, you know, the tunnels and the reptiles that live there. And the
He has me wondering if I can get to the airport early enough to take a tour now.
It's pretty interesting. Maybe we should do a paranormal podcast, but I guess there's no peer-reviewed material on that, so I guess never mind. All right, Mike, well, good stuff. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. God bless.
Thanks for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit www.nakedbibleblog.com. To learn more about Dr. Heiser's other websites and blogs, go to www.drmsh.com.